This is Fresh Air. Josh Waitzkin turned his father into a writer and a devotee of chess. Fred Waitzkin's first book, Searching for Bobby Fischer, was about the discovery of his young son Josh's gift for chess and about their developing relationship against the backdrop of cutthroat competition. The book was made into a movie of the same name, and it's just out in video. Waitzkin's second book, Mortal Games, was a portrait of the world chess champion Garry Kasparov as he prepared to defend his title against his sworn enemy, Anatoly Karpov, in 1990. This was more than just a game between rivals. Kasparov said of his opponent, "He's a creature of darkness. I'm going to crush him." Fred Waitzkin has found from watching chess that it's more than just a quiet cerebral sport. In fact, he says, it's downright violent.
I think it is a violent sport. Most people tend to look at chess as a cerebral, detached activity. But from my experience, both with my son and with chess players that I've gotten to know over the years, they're churning inside. You're really matching your intelligence against the intelligence of another person. And on some kind of level, you really want to destroy that person during the course of the game. So I think it's a kind of internal violence as much as anything.
There's a scene in Searching for Bobby Fischer where one of his teachers says, you must hate your opponent. I mean, you must think of your opponent as your enemy. As a parent, did that disturb you?
It did disturb me. I'm not exactly sure that it's true, though. I think that some players do manufacture a hostility toward their opponent, and others don't. I think that the ones that do find that works for them as sportsmen. Mm-hmm. Chess players tend to rev themselves, as other athletes do, by using certain internal gimmicks. And to hate one's opponent works for certain players. For other players, it blows up in their faces. If they hate their opponent, they become distracted in the game. They don't do particularly well.
Now, is chess a game or a sport, or do you care?
Chess is different things to different people. To certain great champions, to the world champion Garry Kasparov, it's a sport and an art at the same time. To some people, it's a science. To some people, it's a sport. To other people, it's a game.
Your son, Josh, is quoted as saying, thinking of this as a sport, that he got more sweated up in preparation for a chess match than he did playing some of the other sports that he does, that there is, I guess, real aerobic activity associated with the game.
Well, for my son, for Josh, who's now 17 and the co-junior champion of the United States now, which means the champion under 21, Josh is very involved with sports. He's been very, very good at baseball and basketball and football. And the idea of entering into this kind of combat against someone is this is how he looks at it, as a sporting contest. But again, as I say, for another kind of personality, it's mm-hmm. an art form. It's something very different.
Now, do you play chess even recreationally?
I used to during 1970, starting in 1972 when Bobby Fischer was playing Boris Spassky for the world championship and really sort of seized the imagination of America. I began to play chess, as did many of my friends and many people. But now I'm not a chess player so much as a chess fan.
Well, what does it take to write about chess, which of course is such a psychological game? So much of the activity is taking place between somebody's ears. And as someone who has written a lot, what does it take to get inside the sport?
Well, as a writer, for my entire career, I've always taken on subjects that are close to my heart, and I've avoided topics that were remote to me, that weren't terribly interesting. And I began writing about chess largely because of the play of my son. I sort of fell in love with the game through him, very much in the same way I think that a parent admires his son or daughter if she's great in any other activity or sport. So that's where I came to chess. That's where the passion began. And after that, I began to study the game. I became intrigued with it. Now when I go to a chess match, I watch it very much like an NFL game. I mean, I'm just very, very involved in the flow of the pieces, the attack, the subtleties.
What I noticed, even in watching the movie, looking for Bobby Fischer and the little boy who plays your son, is a chess player himself. And you could see when the camera moved right in on his face and he was contemplating his next move, he was actually contemplating his next 15 moves, that he was able to look ahead in a way that
I don't think I could possibly do. I don't know whether you could possibly do as well. But that's a kind of skill that seems just extraordinary to me, to be able to visualize something and to imagine all these moves and keep them all in your head.
It's true. It's remarkable. It's remarkable the way children can play chess at such a high level. And apparently it's a very specific intelligence as well. It doesn't necessarily translate into an ability to be brilliant in mathematics. Mm. My son, for example, who's quite good in mathematics, his gift is for English.
Isn't it interesting?
For writing and language. So, a lot of people think, well, this must imply great ability for algebra. Not necessarily. There seems to be a specific chess talent.
My guest is Fred Waitzkin, author of Searching for Bobby Fischer and Mortal Games. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Fred Waitzkin is my guest.
Let me just get back for the audience that got to know your son through your writing and then also through the book the movie that was made of your book, Searching for Bobby Fischer. You said he is the co-junior U.S. champion. The love of the game that he had at the age of 6 and 7 when he discovered it, does he still have that kind of love, or has it matured? Has it changed? What does it look like? How does he express it?
I think that when Josh first started playing the game at 6 or 7 years old, it was primarily a sporting activity for him. I mean, he just wanted to go and beat the other guy. He didn't know about the art of the game. I mean, he knew it perhaps implicitly. It was within him in a certain primitive way. Now Josh is a very, very good chess player. I mean, he's fighting to become a grandmaster. He's already an international master. And he appreciates the game as an art form in a different way now than he did when he was 6 or 7 years old.
Part of your struggle as a parent of a gifted child, a child prodigy, it was, and I assume probably still is balancing their gifts against a semblance of a normal childhood. As he's 17 now, as you look back on the childhood he did have, do you think you succeeded as a parent to give him the chance to really express himself as a chess player, but also the ability to be a kid?
Well, this is something that I think all parents worry about, and particularly parents that have children that are gifted or somewhat mm-hmm. gifted at certain specific endeavors. You know, we in the United States we favor the idea of the well-rounded person, and we start to become uneasy if our children are doing things to excess. In Josh's case, we certainly worried about this. We wanted to make sure that he was doing enough sports, that he was studying school enough, that he was having a social life, on and on and on. But as Josh became older, I started to appreciate more and more the fact that if a child is going to become exceptionally good at something, world class at something, he really has to devote him or herself at it. And when people ask me this question today, parents that have gifted children, you know, what is the relationship mm-hmm. between how much work my son or daughter ought to do with this or that and the rest of his life? I tend to feel more now than I did when Josh was a little boy that if anything, he probably should have done more chess rather than little chess. Because my own personal bias is that you're only terribly good at one or two things in your life. You're not, you know, unless you're Leonardo, you're not good at everything. You're not brilliant at everything. And if you have a gift for something, it's something of a crime not to cultivate it. So when I look back at Josh's life, which I think was a very well-rounded life, I probably would have encouraged him to study a little bit more chess.
But, you know, I'm thinking of what parents say to their well-rounded average kids. Say they're playing baseball. They lose the game. They're going home. And they say, well, it was only a game. You'll be okay. Better luck next time. But when you have a child like yours or like another child who has a particular gift, it isn't just a game. It's really an expression of themselves. So their winning and losing has a different value attached to it.
It does. It really does. And as a parent, you're tempted to say it's only a game because you don't want your son and daughter to grieve. The pain rips you apart. But on the other hand, I mean, you know, this activity, whether it's tennis or violin or chess, is so central to the child's life and your life as a parent, because you have to realize that a child can't do this himself. It doesn't matter who the child is. If you have an 8 or 9 year old child that's gifted at something, you need a parent or two parents that are completely in there with this kid, living and dying with him, encouraging him to do his practice. The child simply, also I'm asked by parents, should I be, you know, should I be encouraging him to work? Or on the other hand, I won't encourage him to work. If he doesn't go off and do it by himself, it shows that he doesn't really want to do it. Not so.
Mm.
Not so. No 8-year-old is going to close himself into a room and play the piano for 3.5 hours. He needs the encouragement of a parent.
Let me ask you just a quick follow-up on the title of your book, Searching for Bobby mm-hmm. Fischer. Bobby Fischer, of course, a gifted player, extremely controversial person. In the search, I know you weren't personally looking for him, but for who he is in the world of chess, and your son being identified when he was young as the next Bobby Fischer, was there both a fear and a wish? A fear because, as it turns out, Bobby Fischer lives a very strange life. He's anti-Semitic. He's a person who seems to be quite disconnected from other people, and of course, a very gifted player.
Right. Well, you're exactly right. I mean, Bobby Fischer has haunted the American chess scene since 1972. I mean, he won the world championship from Boris Spassky in a thrilling fashion. And at that time, our land was alive with chess. Chess was on the cover of all the major magazines. Fischer was on television with Shelby Lyman. There seemed to be great potential for the game of chess in America. But then instead of defending the title against Anatoly Karpov in 1973, he disappeared and lived the life of a recluse, crazy political ideas, anti-Semitism, a horrible, distorted figure as he grew older in seclusion. The title Searching for Bobby Fischer is undoubtedly metaphoric in the sense that I think that the American chess scene has been searching for a new Bobby Fischer, because if we had a player that was born in America that could challenge for the world championship, it might reinvigorate the game here. As a chess parent myself, yeah, I found it both thrilling and terribly threatening. But my son could never be like Bobby Fischer on a personal level. I mean, he's a very, you know, he's very, I hate that we use this word well-rounded, because, you know, it can apply bad things as well as good things, but he's a broadly based person.
Do you enjoy watching your son play? Is that pleasurable for you? And again, reading through your book, I got the feeling that it was really agony.
It can be, and
certainly watching him suffer. And there is suffering in chess, it seems to me.
Well, Marty, when Josh first started playing chess, when he was 6 and 7 years old, and he would play against adults in Washington Square Park mm-hmm. and win some and lose some, it was mainly agony for me. And I think it had to do with the fact that I didn't really believe that he was playing the games. In some crazy way, I thought I was playing the games and he was moving the pieces. Because how could this little kid, 2.5 feet tall, be playing so well? I thought the whole thing would crumble like a house of cards, and that it was some incredible psychological projection that was taking place every day in the park. And even when he would play in scholastic tournaments against other little kids, I thought it was something of an illusion that was happening. As Josh got older, thank God, I separated myself to a certain degree, and it became clear to me that he was playing the game and I was watching the game. On an emotional level, of course, I'm talking. I mean, now when I watch Josh play, I can't say that it's a detached experience. I mean, in a way, I'm his manager. I'm his dad. I don't want him to lose. If he loses, he's miserable, and then I'm miserable. But it's not the same kind of experience emotionally, not as tortured as when he was a little kid.
Well, the parent-child relationships you describe are really the kind of quintessential stage parent, it seems, for a lot of them. Mm-hmm. There is this over-identification mm-hmm, mm-hmm. with their child's success or failure.
Right, right. And it's funny because it depends, again, on the perspective that you have on it. I mean, when one refers to a stage parent, it has invariably a negative connotation.
Oh, absolutely.
But once again, you can't have a John McEnroe without a Mr. McEnroe. You would never have a John McEnroe.
Fred Waitzkin's book about his son searching for Bobby Fischer was made into a movie, which is now out in video. His other book about world chess champion Garry Kasparov is called Mortal Games. This is Fresh Air.